Okay, thank you very much. Your picture is very dark. We can't see you properly. Yes.
Let me see if I can try and change my angle. Is this better, Chief?
I think the light behind you is not good. Much better.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Kwaboto. You are welcome to this interview. Hypothetically, imagine that you are appointed as a commissioner. How would you convince us that you are able to step in the role? Repeat the question. How would you convince us that you are able to step into the role? In doing so, please tell us about who you are, your values and experience.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good afternoon also to the other members of the committee. Your voice is quite faint, although I did hear the question. So I will attempt to respond. My name is Nomvundo Jobo Kobodo, and I am a child of the Eastern Cape in Umtata, and I was raised in the Eastern Cape, went to school there, boarding school, ended up at the University of KwaZulu-Natal with a BProc degree, then proceeded to do my articles in Umtata. Firm of attorneys called Kanga and Company. I then proceeded also to Findlay and Tate in Cape Town to finish off my articles, and then I did 6 months of practice legal training, which then allowed me to get my admission as an attorney. After that, I worked at the, trying to remember the flow. I think I worked at the Community Law Center as a legal researcher, and my focus was on children's rights. I did some various investigations working at the University of the Western Cape. It was a clinic. Some of the work that I did were associated with child justice, conducting research in prisons. Then at that point in time, we were dealing with the question of generally the Children's Act, as well as the issues of children in conflict with the law, and trying to define how they should be held in prison, separate from adults, intervention strategies that would be associated. So that was the type of thing that I did, conducted those research, especially in the Western Cape then, and some prisons in the Eastern Cape. I then went abroad for, I think, about 3 years, and I came back and worked for 6 months on a contract with the Human Rights Commission as a legal researcher. My work there was to deal with the resentencing of prisoners who had been sentenced to life. This was after the State versus Mkhwanyane judgment of the Constitutional Court that declared the death penalty as unconstitutional, and really in contrast with the right to life and dignity. After that, I went to work for the Legal Resource Center in Durban as an attorney, where I did mostly work related to the Bill of Rights, intervening in various matters, whether it was litigation, mediation, research, policy review recommendations, issues that relate to general access to justice, And I stayed there for quite a long time, and then I moved to, again, to the Department of Justice National for a contract of 6 months. I think I had a sabbatical from the Legal Resource Center, and I worked in the unit that deals with vulnerable groups. And again, focus was on the policy initiatives around the issues of child justice and the children, really juvenile justice, in trying to draft, assist drafting the policies that are associated. So I stayed there for the 6 months, where we also did workshops and consultations with the magistrates' courts, bringing awareness on issues of child justice and issues associated, for example, diversions of children from courts and the like. I then moved back to the Legal Resource Center, but this time in Johannesburg. And after a year or so, I think I then was appointed to head the office of the Legal Resource Center as director in Johannesburg. And I continued to focus on really strategic litigation and land rights, housing rights, especially housing, dealing with the housing stock that is the former township housing stock, the four rooms, the implications that are associated with that around the ownership, the issues of title deeds, and also the government's policy on how they would donate or transfer those properties to the rightful beneficiaries.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Do you have any criminal record?
I have no criminal record.
Were you ever declared to be insolvent?
No, I have never been declared to be insolvent.
Thank you very much. Do you know perhaps the salary of the commissioner or a deputy chairperson of the South African Human Rights Commission?
I actually thought about it, Chair, but I am not completely sure. I would assume that it would be commensurate with the type of salary that I earn as a commissioner in the Commission on Restitution of Land Rights.
Thank you so much.
It's about 1.5 million.
The deputy chairperson of the Human Rights Commission earns about 1.2. And then the commissioner earns about 1.18. So in light of the information you have now, are you still comfortable with the salary?
I think it's something that I would have to think about, but I'm not necessarily immediately saying no. I think it's something that I would have to consider, do my calculations and understand what the implications would be for me.
Is there any particular reason, because the salaries of commissioners, of MPs are readily available online, that you did not do the research before you accepted or you applied?
Well, I suppose it's just one of those things where you operate as a commission, and in my own mind, maybe negligently, so I assume that the salaries would be around the same. But I, like I say, I have no problem in thinking about that and see how that would impact on me. But I think also it's not only about the salary, it's also about the type of work that you want to do. And I am passionate about issues of human rights. So that's why I'm saying that it's something that I would have to apply my mind to. But there is no position that says that then automatically that's a no for me.
Well, thank you very much, Ms. Kobato. Members, let me note hands. I have Honorable Jelle. Honorable Jelle, can you start?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good day, Ms. Nomfundo.
Good day, honorable member.
Yes, I only have three questions for you, my sister. The first one is, as a South African, what do you think are some of South Africa's achievements in advancing human rights?
So let me see if I heard the question. For some reason, the voice sounds very low. I've adjusted mine, and it is at the top.
No, I'll do that. I'll repeat it. I was saying, what do you think are some of the South Africa's achievements in advancing human rights?
Very interesting question. I think firstly that just the fact that we've got a constitution in itself that has a strong Bill of Rights, and the fact that it was introduced and accepted by the majority of South Africans in itself is an accomplishment. And I think that most of us know as well that the Constitution of South Africa is regarded as one of the key or important constitutions in the world. And already, I think that is an achievement. But while it is an achievement, I think it raises an obligation on us as a country to ensure that we then are able to meet that standard that we've set for ourselves as a country. I think also one would immediately go to the Constitutional Court judgment of S. versus Nkwanyane that spoke to the fact that the death penalty was declared unconstitutional. I think that was the key accomplishment of South Africa as a country in acknowledging the right to life. Another one would be that of the rights of people who are in relationship with same sex partners' rights to be able to marry. I think there are quite a number of progressions, and even the fact that we've got a South African Human Rights Commission that is set up to ensure that those rights are advocated for, protected, and pushed forward.
Thank you. Thank you very much. My next question would be, many people or communities within our societies, particularly those from the marginalized areas, former marginalized areas, have or still have a challenge in accessing the human rights services. You know, it seems as if awareness, it has been done, but maybe it has not yet reached to the level where our societies can say, no, we are fine, we know exactly now what to do in such circumstances. I just want to know from your side, Ms. Nomfundo, if what innovative means would you adopt to promote public awareness and access to human rights if you are appointed as a commissioner? Thank you.
Thank you. I think one of the most important factors around the Bill of Rights is us understanding that the Bill of Rights have to become a living document in order for it to be effective, because as long as you've got a Bill of Rights that is not known or understood, then it becomes difficult for the people who are in South Africa to exercise their rights when those rights are violated. And so I think the key foundation is to ensure that you provide access to justice, which should be able to be available in the most rural of places. So I feel that the work that is done, for example, by justice centers, the Legal Aid Board, the magistrates' courts, we need to find a way to expand the footprint so that access to justice is not only accessed by those who are nearer to towns or so, and so forth. And nowadays we're talking about technology, fourth industrial revolution. We have to find a way of ensuring that the accessibility of justice is made in those deep rural areas, and also make sure that the people who live in those villages actually understand. So our awareness, education, innovative ways of getting the information to the people so that when they understand when their rights are challenged, and they are able to know exactly where to go in order for them to be able to enforce their rights.
Honorable Jelle, you have 2 minutes.
Okay, I think this is the last one, Chair. The last question, Ms. Nomfundo, is that as you would realize that in South Africa, we are operating in a very highly charged, politically charged environment. How would you handle the complaints that may be potentially politically sensitive or otherwise controversial, in the light of your understanding of the role of the Human Rights Commission? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I think the first part is to understand that as a commissioner, your role is to be able to implement the Bill of Rights without fear or favor and prejudice. Understand that your obligation is to the Constitution, which is the supreme law of the land. And I believe very strongly that if you are an ethical leader and you are able to stick to what the law requires you to do, there's really very little for you to be scared of, because you are not guided by your own thinking that might be flawed, but you're focusing on what the Constitution says you can do, and you have to then use your own leadership skills to be able to communicate and argue your point without disrespecting anybody, but putting your point across so that you are understood and you are able to then achieve the broader goal, which is about enforcing the rights of the citizens of the country.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Jelle. Honorable Glenis Breitenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, Madam. I have two questions. Why do you think that the Constitution requires that the Commission be both independent and impartial, and why the Constitution protects the Commission's independence? That's the first one.
Okay, I hope I understood the question. I think the independence of the Commission and the Commissioners is paramount in order for us to be able to implement and grow the culture of human rights in South Africa. And I think that we have to be independent and impartial so that the communities or citizens and or individuals that stay in the country have confidence in the work of the Commission, and that they understand that there is no question of potential bias or favoritism, but it is about purely interpreting and understanding the supreme law of the country. And so it is very important that the people that get appointed to be commissioners are people who are beyond reproach and understand that their obligation is to the Constitution and nothing else. I'm not sure that I understood the second question.
Thank you. The second question is, if you are appointed, what legacy would you like to leave? And I'd like you to be brief, please.
Okay. Legacy that I'd like to leave, I think for me, is to ensure that I have aggressively pursued advocacy, especially on the rights possibly to housing on in the townships, the issue of land, child justice, and access to justice. If I could be able to challenge policy, write reviews and research, and potentially be able to contribute towards better policies and impact. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm done, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Mofuke.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you to Ms. Gobodo. I think for Gobodo. Ma'am, I just want to check with you. As you know, that month, the month of March is human rights, is when we celebrate human rights. Can we actually get an understanding that what can be done by the South African Human Rights Commission in making sure that they combat scourges of racism, racial discrimination, xenophobia and related intolerances, and as well as gender-based violence and femicide, which are undermining South Africa's human rights culture? I hope you could hear me.
Yes, so it's about discrimination, gender discrimination and the violence that's associated with it.
Yes.
In the month. I think that as a country, we have to acknowledge that the issue of racism as well as the issue of gender-based violence are things that have become a focal point because we, for some reason or the other, have found ourselves in the public space having to deal with these issues of racism, whether it's on social media and also the multiple violent deaths of young women. We as the Human Rights Commission, who would have an obligation to enforce the right to equality and a right to bodily integrity of women, I think it would be very important that even as the human rights continues to educate, we would have to have perhaps forums where we are able to discuss and engage, not just, for example, with women, but with men as well on issues of violence against women, to drive initiatives that are actually in the communities themselves so that the communities can begin to own interventions that would be associated. And for us perhaps to identify some key cases where, for example, whether it's discrimination or gender-based violence, where we can either increase the capacity of the state to be able to deal with this through interface with policy and legislation, if possible, identify specific cases where we can become amicus curiae in order for us to ensure that the obligations that are associated with human rights on the issue of racial discrimination and violence against women is enforced. I think the good thing as well is that there seems to be some level of awareness on the two issues. And we just need to then take advantage of the momentum that's there and create the fora for discussion and also send out various communications so that the issue, which is already topical, can then be discussed with better or clear understanding by the discussion.
Okay, thank you very much. Can I get what suggestions do you have to improve public understanding of the role of our Chapter 9 institutions?
I think one important issue is for us to be more visible, and the visibility through our own programs, educating, being on the ground, partnering with other similar institutions, whether we're talking about the Gender Commission and other government institutions, to be able to share the information that we have, the understanding, maybe even going to schools, engaging children in specific debates around what their understanding of human rights is, various things, competitions for the young people, and also just perhaps when we've got big cases like those that actually are at the forefront in the media, for us to take those as an opportunity to teach and to educate and to create awareness on what an individual would be able to do or a community should they face the same situation.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you, Me.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mofokeng, Honorable Ngola.
Chair, can you pass me? I'm traveling to the chamber.
Honorable Nivo Trachan.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon, Ms. Kobodo. I am using sign language, and the voice that you are hearing is my sign language interpreter. In your view, what are the critical human rights challenges that South Africa is currently facing?
Thank you. I think the first one would be, for me, access to justice, because if you deal with access to justice, you create opportunities for civil society or our citizenry to be able to then access opportunities to know and understand the other rights that are in the Bill of Rights. So if we can open up and provide access to justice as much as possible, then any individual, whether they're at the deep, deep rural area, can actually approach, whether it's the courts, justice centers or whatever, to get to understand their rights and also get assistance. But the second issue, which is key, is the one that was already discussed, which is the issue of gender-based violence, which has become endemic in our country and it has become urgent for us to address. I am a mother of two girls, so I understand that sharply, that it is the responsibility of all of us, and myself as a mother, I have to be part of the solution of how we deal with overcome domestic gender-based violence and domestic violence. The other issue is the magnitude and severity of service delivery protests that are there that reflect level of discomfort by our communities, which then talks to issues of basic services, the levels of poverty that we continue to see. And so I think those are some of the key issues that we need to deal with. Because if we're able to provide equality through opportunity and basic services, especially water and sanitation, then we give the people of the country an opportunity to be able to really dream on what possibly they could do towards improving their livelihoods.
Thank you for that. The coronavirus pandemic caused the limitation of human rights in the interest of greater good. Now, it based a spotlight on the role of the state and the Human Rights Commission during the pandemic. Now, in your view, what are the key human rights issues that emerged during that time?
Thank you very much. I think that one of the key human rights violations, issues that emerged was I mean, we understand that when there is a state of emergency, there are certain rights that can be limited, but that the state has an obligation to do so responsibly. But at the same time, there have to be institutions like the Human Rights Commission to monitor that the limitations are done reasonably. For example, right to movement, which, if you think about it, can sound like it's a simple thing, right to movement, but it had an implication on people's rights to food, well-being. And as a result, we saw police violence that was associated with it. And so I think that in effect, by not default, we ended up, it was a byproduct of what the focus where we were wanting to deal with COVID, but we created the problems. And I think that bodies like the Human Rights Commission are there then to monitor and remind government institutions of their obligations to still respect the human rights of everybody despite the pandemic.
Now, linked with that question, what do you think the South African Human Rights Commission's, do you think the South African Human Rights Commission's response was adequate during COVID?
I think in my view, probably not, because I don't think that the Human Rights Commission was visible at all. And I think that we could have acted swiftly, especially with around the killing of individuals in their homes and some of the abuses that were seen on social media. I think that we should have possibly participated in the government, the committee, just forgot the name of the committee that sits in deciding what are the next steps to be done. I think if we were able to sit there, we would, even if we were only a monitoring party, to be able to give, to contribute to the regulations as they were made. Yeah, I think so.
Now, out of that situation, what are the future lessons that we can learn from this?
I think, firstly, we probably will have to, as a commission, conduct a review of the year in its entirety, looking at the various levels and looking at the impact and the lessons learned, possibly be able to submit some type of report to government on specific violations of human rights and interventions that we propose, and if there were specific violations that are still present and exist, recommend some form of alternative measures or redress, and maybe compensation for those who are affected if necessary.
Thank you. My last question. Each commissioner has specific focus areas. What would be your two critical focus areas if you should be appointed, that you would like to promote and develop should you be appointed?
Passionate about housing rights, specifically for targeting the poor, dealing with issues of informal settlements, tenure rights, possibly associated with land. Issues of access to justice are something that is important for me, and possibly children's rights as well. Yes, so it's actually quite a myriad. I think I've realized, looking at my work history, that most of my life I've been working on human rights issues.
Thank you, Chair. I would just like to add a comment. When you say children's rights, please don't forget children with disabilities, because they also have the same rights. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nebul Krachan, Honorable Msana.
Thank you very much, Chair. Greetings, Makoboto. What innovations would you wish to introduce in the human rights space if you were appointed commissioner? And how do you plan on bringing knowledge and interest of South African youth in the human rights space?
Thank you very much. I think one of the innovations I would want to introduce is using how we would use the media space, and I mean as in access to internet, social media, because that's where the youth are. And I think that that's an innovation that possibly can be able to spread awareness and education about human rights. And with the understanding that even those youth don't stay by themselves in their own households, so they're able to communicate with their families on these issues, but at the same time, they're able to communicate with their counterparts, whether it's in school or outside of school. Because if you look at how the social media space has evolved, and you look at how, for example, my own children who no longer watch TV but watch YouTube, and when they need to learn something, they can go to a video on YouTube to understand whether it's for university or not. So I think for me, that would be one innovation that I would want to pursue.
Thank you. If you are appointed, you would have to lead others. So how would you describe your leadership style? And can you provide us with an example where you have successfully led maybe a program or a project with your leadership and it benefited South Africans?
Okay, thank you. My leadership style is mostly consultative in the sense that I understand that I work in a team. And even though I lead a team, that I am as strong as my weakest link. And so it is important for me to ensure that all of the team members have an understanding of where we're going and that we walk in the same rhythm. I have to make sure that I understand the strengths of the people in my team so that they're able to feed off each other. And that I can't ignore the weakest link, but in fact, my belief is always that you won't find a human being who does not have a strength, and so you have to find that strength to try and encourage. Even though I consult and make decisions after understanding the team's view, sometimes I understand that you cannot consult and consult and consult. You have to get to a point where you make a decision on behalf of your team and you take responsibility for that decision, whether it ends up being a very good decision or a very bad decision, but you own responsibility, you take responsibility for the decisions that you make. I work currently as a commissioner for the restitution of land rights. I work with a staff of about 700 plus people, and most of our work is based on projects. And so on a daily basis, we deal with projects, currently working with a project called Project Guyasa, where we're trying to look at efficiencies of the commission, review performance and the structure and all of that. So seeing the collective excitement of the team and the outcomes where we're able to account for things that we're not able to account for before, to be able to do analysis and make recommendations to our department and others, I think for me would be one of the examples if I look at internal processes within the commission. Maybe if I would think about matters that I have dealt with in court that have succeeded, and we've ended up having individuals who were able to benefit from the work that we did, where we would start the project from beginning and ended up with the handover. I recently negotiated a big claim with Ebenezer in the Western Cape, and I think the negotiation was with big number of attorneys and advocates. I don't remember the numbers, but it took us about 3 weeks of negotiation during the COVID period. And at the end of the day, we're able to succeed and transfer high value quality land to claimants in Ebenezer, in the Western Cape.
Okay. Which supporting skills do you think are most important when it comes to effective leadership of an organization such as the South African Human Rights Council? Mamo Kobo, I really don't have a lot of time, so you can just be very brief.
Okay. I think key is the team that is around you, especially the one that is able to understand the core of your work and are able to help with research that is associated. The people that are on the ground in the provinces would be key, because they become the feet of implementation in the work that the commission does. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Ma'am Kobato.
Thank you very much, Honorable Janje.
Thank you, Chairperson. Ms. Kobodo, let's go to the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. Which section of the Constitution deals with the appointment of commissioners?
The appointment of commissioners of the Human Rights Commission?
Yes, Ms. Kobodo.
Okay. Well, the Human Rights Commission is found in Section 184.1 of the Constitution, and specifically speaks to the functions, but at the same time makes reference to enabling legislation, which is...
I'm specific on the appointments.
Section...
Yeah, let me be generous and tell you it's Section 193 of the Constitution, okay, which deals with appointment of the public protector and commissioners who must be women or men, and who must be South Africans and fit and proper. I want you to tell us why do they emphasize women or men and not persons? Yes.
Why they emphasize women or men?
Or is it just English?
No, I think perhaps in the context now of issues of gender, fluidity, the LGBTQI community, I would have questions about that, but I would honestly say I have an answer.
Well, before you have questions about it, I want you to answer me. Why do they put woman or man? What was guiding them? Why? What was the need to do that at the time when this was adopted?
I suppose at the time it was about ensuring that the issue of gender equality is addressed effectively, and we don't find ourselves with a commission that consists of mostly males.
Thank you. Let's proceed to the next point. I've mentioned fit and proper as one of the qualities, requirements needed. What's your understanding of fit and proper, Commissioner?
My understanding of a fit and proper person is someone who is in good standing with the law, understands the ethical obligations, issues of impartiality and their independence in how they interpret and understand the law without fear or favor or prejudice.
Is Ms. Nhloko Kobodo a fit and proper applicant today?
As far as I am concerned, I am confident that I am a fit and proper applicant.
Why?
Because I believe strongly that I am a person of integrity. I operate understanding my ethics and the responsibilities that are associated with it. And further, I understand my obligation to the Constitution and to the citizens or the people who occupy South Africa as a country.
Okay. Let's take that fit and proper forbode or feather. And I say to you, subsection 2 of the same section 193 speaks about balancing issues of race, gender, for the kind of person that we must appoint as this panel. If you take your fit and proper, why would we go for Nomfundo Nhloko Gobodo when we have got another woman of your age, of your gender, I mean of your race, of your performance and credentials? What value are you bringing?
I think the value that I bring is my leadership capability. Number two, it is my knowledge in human rights law and the fact that I've practiced it for the past 20 years. And even though you might have other women in the commission, I am sure that even as women in the commission, we will bring different skills. And in partnership, we should then be able to strategically elevate the work of the commission using our capabilities.
In your own view, I hope that because this is your prayer, that's the reason you are here. You are praying to be a commissioner of the South African Human Rights Commission. You might have studied or researched what weaknesses and strengths of these commissions are. Did you find out whether the South African Human Rights Commission has been successful in pursuing its mandate? And in answering that, please lift up one critical area of failure that from a distance that you have seen in the Human Rights Commission. And what is it, if you are successful, you would do to fix that?
Thank you. I think for me, to a certain extent, the Human Rights Commission has been successful in some areas, but it could definitely do better. And key is one being our communication, not very strong. And in order for us to be able to push for advocacy, we need to be able to communicate effectively. And communication not in the old way of communicating, but being able to be agile and communicate in the new way of how society communicates. I also think that one issue that the Human Rights Commission could do better is interfacing with policy in government to be able to actively highlight potential unconstitutionality before legislation, because with the type of budget that is associated with the commission, we need to target so that there's maximum impact.
So let's pause there. We'll continue that discussion. Thank you, Mamu Gobodo. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Janje. I think, Mrs. Gobodo, you were able to answer the question that I was going to ask you of whether are there any issues that if they were brought to the attention of the public, they would put the organization into disrepute. And I think you have been able to answer that you are a person of integrity. And nothing, I think you said would be found that would be that would put you into disrepute and the organization into disrepute. I would like to thank you very much for availing yourself to be part of these interviews and to be part of possibly to be part of the commission. In your own view, do you think that the questions or the interview was fair?
Yes, Chair, I think that the questions were fair.
And was the interview conducted fairly?
The interview was conducted fairly, Chair.
Thank you very much. As you know that we have recently asked you to submit your fingerprints. We have not yet received a screening report. Once that is done, we'll be able to make a decision which is going to be considered by the National Assembly. So once a decision has been made by the committee, then it will be a recommendation to the National Assembly. Then you would know very soon as to whether you have been able to be appointed or not. But I would like to thank you very much for appealing yourself.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, and to the Honourable Members. Much appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mamukoboto. Members, we will come.